Thank you for taking part in the Nuclear Medicine Molecular Medicine podcast, and I really appreciate you taking your time for this. I just came from a very interesting talk which involved a number of different speakers, but sort of the primary focus of the talk was really how different neuroimaging traces match together, I think, and that was something covered by a number of authors. Perhaps we could start by, if you could just introduce yourself, tell us where you work and what your background is.
So my name is Alex Cheska. I'm chair of the nuclear medicine department in Cologne at the University of Cologne. My background is nuclear medicine. We have been performing studies on dementia and neurodegeneration using molecular imaging traces for many years.
And the talk that you did FDG imaging, tau imaging, and amyloid imaging. What traces did you use?
So we used C11-PIB, which is the best established tracer for amyloid imaging, C11 labeled, so it has a short half-life and can be combined with other tracers, and depicts amyloid plaque deposition in the brain. We used the T807, which is also called AB145051, a tracer for tau imaging, which is able to detect tau aggregates or neurofibrillary tangles located inside the neurons in the brain. And we used a very established tracer, which is FDG, that discovers changes in metabolism in the brain, which are associated with neural dysfunction. So FDG is a very well-established tracer to detect regions in the brain that are dysfunctional. And we combined the three tracers to address the interaction of these two molecular pathologies, which is amyloid deposition, extracellular amyloid deposition, intraneuronal tau deposition, and neuronal dysfunction in this sort of a tree modality PET approach.
Right, because traditionally, there's been amyloid imaging to look at Alzheimer's, prodromal Alzheimer's disease, I guess, and FDG has been used to look at dysfunction, which is non-specific for Alzheimer's, but it's been useful in dementia field. Tau is increasingly being used, but the tau traces at the moment are quite different in terms of their uptake. I think there seem to be some differences in that. So. What was the general patterns of that? You did this on a number of subjects. Some were healthy, some were AD, some were MCI.
So the subjects that we recruited were all AD, clearly characterized. So it was a group in a moderate stage of Alzheimer's disease.
Right.
But we compared the results with pre-existing groups of healthy subjects to detect abnormalities as compared to what we would see in a healthy person.
Right.
Which is important because, of course, tracer uptake levels are variable, and we wanted to see what is really significantly above what you would see in an age-matched control group. So we compared the data and the patients to healthy controls. And at this point, it's potentially important to also mention that this was an interdisciplinary collaboration, and many groups were involved also for recruiting the patients in this study. So we collaborated with the neurology and psychiatry department at our center, and also with the so-called DZNE, which is the German Center for Neurodegeneration Research, which has the headquarters in Bonn. So patients were coming from all these involved groups. And we have a multimodal neuroimaging group at our center that is guided by Professor von Eimeren, that basically coordinated all these efforts.
Right. So how many subjects were involved?
So these were 10 subjects. Now they were really clearly characterized. We selected patients where we would be sure that this is actually Alzheimer's disease in a specific stage of disease, as we know or would expect that with further progression of disease, the levels of pathology would change. And in very early stages of disease, we might not see neurodegeneration. So that's why we selected this population to have a concise patient.
Right. right. And you looked at the regional distribution of the traces, and what was the overall patterns of distribution of the traces in this population?
So this is the most interesting finding, basically, that the amyloid pathology was relatively broadly distributed across the brain. This is also what we knew from previous studies. There are some susceptibility regions that are more strongly struck by amyloid pathology, but in general, it's a relatively diffuse pattern of distribution across the brain. We also know that amyloid pathology levels do not correspond quite clearly with the degree of cognitive dysfunction. For FDG, we found also the typical pattern of neuronal dysfunction, which was located predominantly in temporal parietal regions of the brain, a little bit in frontal regions, sparing the sensory motor cortex and the occipital regions of the brain, in a very typical finding as we would expect in Alzheimer's disease. And it has been demonstrated before that these two, amyloid and FDG, are not really strongly correlating. So, but the striking and interesting finding in this study was that the tau deposition was actually very closely correlated to the pattern of hypometabolism. So this is implicating that potentially amyloid deposition is sort of representing a predisposition for disease, but where the actual tau neurofibrillary tangle pathology is occurring, these are the regions where neuronal dysfunction will then follow. And this was not only topographically the case in an overlap by shape of the pathologies, but also quantitatively. So the levels of tau pathology corresponded or correlated nicely with the levels of neuronal dysfunction. And this was not the case in general for amyloid across the entire brain. However, we found also, interestingly, an indirect interaction between amyloid and neuronal dysfunction mediated via tau. So in regions where we would have amyloid and tau pathology, they would interact in a way that more amyloid would increase the impact of tau on neuronal dysfunction. This sort of fits into the disease concepts that are currently discussed.
So does tau changes occur before FDG changes occur, or about the same time?
So this is something we cannot yet answer, as we would need longitudinal studies. It is, however, interesting to see that even in our cases, the overlap was not 100%, but it seemed that tau abnormalities are a little bit more extended as compared to the hypometabolic abnormalities, and that could implicate at least that the neuronal dysfunction changes will maybe grow into the pattern of tau abnormality with continuing time. That's something we would like to monitor over time in the future in longitudinal studies.
So is tau the cause of the neuronal dysfunction, or is it the symptom?
That is a good question, which we cannot answer directly by imaging, of course. I think it's interesting to have this opportunity to, for the first time, really correlate these markers of molecular pathology with function. And that is something you could certainly not do in autopsy. So far, we were able in let's say, post-mortem assessment, pathological assessment, to detect where you would find amyloid pathology or tau pathology in the brain, but you could never establish a correlation towards neural dysfunction in the postmortem tissue. And that's something we can do now. So in longitudinal studies, there might be a use in these modalities in establishing an order of the occurrence of pathology, and that might also be interpreted in a way that we get an idea if they might be causally involved in the neurodegenerative process. But it's not a method where we can directly prove what's going on the molecular basis. It's just indicators or biomarkers that we can measure.
Presumably this has got important implications for therapy, because if we know amyloid happens early, and we've got a fairly good idea that if we manage to remove amyloid, we may actually prevent Alzheimer's disease, but that's going to happen long before symptoms occur. And then if we had a method of ameliorating the effect of tau, then we may have another therapy, or we may have a therapy that maybe affects the way amyloid affects tau. All of these kind of things are important to understand, I guess.
Absolutely. So we have this finding that in, let's say, 25 to 30% of healthy elderly subjects, you would find amyloid pathology in a significant extent. And it is yet not completely clear if these patients will ever forward to Alzheimer's disease, although there is increasing evidence that this is probably the case. at some point in time. We are not sure how long this can take, and it is quite well accepted that this will be or can be many years. So the question is, you have the predisposition of amyloid, but when is actual neurodegeneration starting? And if we believe that tau might be the instigating factor, then it's very important to measure tau with regard to onset of neuropathology, and it might be also very important with regard to novel therapy options, because we could measure if we can delay this onset, the appearance of tau in general, or the progression of tau pathology across the brain. And we know that it is, keeps progressing and probably leads to further neuronal dysfunction. So stopping the progress would be something of great importance.
Right. We also know that anti-amyloid therapies aren't effective later in the disease. So could tau be used, for example, as an upper limit of your therapy? So if you've got amyloid, then you may want to do amyloid therapy. But if you've got tau, then it may be too late for amyloid therapy.
So there are several dimensions, I think, for therapy monitoring. We know that in previous studies, there had been patients included into anti-amyloid trials that did not actually have amyloid in their brain.
So amyloid, they didn't have Alzheimer's disease.
Exactly. And no wonder that therapies are not helpful in that
exactly.
cases. So this is one part that you would want to include patients that are suffering from the pathology in the first line. But then again, you have this broad spectrum of disease which cannot be measured by amyloid alone. So you do not really know where in the scope or in the stage of disease the patient is. And tau might be helpful in assessing this and also measuring effects even of anti-amyloid therapies with regard to the onset of tau pathology or the progress, if there is this interplay that we assume that it's that is.
So what you might do is you do your anti-amyloid therapy and then you look for tau, and if you see tau appearance is delayed, then you might suspect that the anti-amyloid therapy is doing its job.
Exactly.
Or you might say it's time to stop therapy, because some of these therapies are going to be very expensive.
Yeah.
So it may be worthwhile not persisting with therapy once the tau is apparent.
Exactly. So what I think is that maybe amyloid imaging might be a good tool for including patients, but tau might be a good tool to measure efficacy of therapy. So it has different dimensions. And also we have novel anti-tau therapies around. Mm-hmm. And of course, tau imaging might also be very, very valuable and helpful.
Right. Yeah. But tau therapy is still, I guess, well, tau imaging is in an early stage compared to amyloid therapy.
Yes.
Amyloid imaging. I mean, we've done amyloid imaging for quite a number of years. We've got a reasonably good understanding of the different amyloid traces. But and they do have the different amyloid traces do appear differently. But the difference, from what I could see in terms of the tau traces, seem to be very much different. Would that be a fair comment?
It's a lot more complicated. The entire spectrum of tauopathies is a lot more complicated because we have different isoforms, we have different constitutions of the tau aggregates, and we have a number of tauopathies. It's not only Alzheimer's, well, there's other pathologies, but it's a whole bunch of disorders that exhibit tau pathology in their brain, and tau isn't equal to tau. It appears in many different forms. So the same thing for the tracers, and we are not really there yet to know what are the exact differences or properties of these traces, but there are apparent differences in binding behavior in Alzheimer's disease and also in other tauopathies, and that's of course a matter of research currently. We will also have to perform studies, as it has been done in amyloid imaging, where in vivo versus ex vivo data is compared to really get an idea what we are measuring with these traces. The distribution patterns, however, and that can be fairly said for the available traces at the moment, are corresponding quite well to what we expect from the Braak stages in Alzheimer's disease. So they seem to be quite reliably measure tauopathy in Alzheimer's disease. That's the current state of knowledge.
Do you think the tau traces show tauopathy in non-Alzheimer's disease, for example, to chronic traumatic encephalopathy or Niemann-Pick's or other sorts of diseases?
There are some reports for some of the tracers where this has been demonstrated. There's sort of a consensus that in the frontotemporal lobar degenerative disorders, most of these tracers seem to have lower binding as compared to Alzheimer's disease. But there are some examples, also some studies even presented on this meeting here, for example, in PSP, progressive supranuclear palsy, where some of these tracers also seem to be binding to the tauopathy in this type of disorder. So it is obviously not impossible, but we are not quite there yet to really know on how well it is binding, so and what these imaging results are actually reflecting in the different types of disorders.
Do you think it might be that we might use one particular tau tracer for Alzheimer's disease and a different tau tracer for other tauopathies?
Absolutely. This may be the case in the future.
That's very interesting, and I think it shows a great deal of potential, particularly now that therapies are coming online, that really the most expensive disease that we have, we may actually be getting a handle on because of imaging, and because when all these therapies occurred before we had this imaging, they failed, really, didn't they?
Yes.
And now we're starting to use them for imaging, like in the Biogen trial and some of the other trials, we're actually showing there may be some success. So imaging really is not just about diagnosis, it's about a tool for management.
Absolutely. And I mean, we are learning, also the dementia experts are learning, that the symptomatic appearance is not really a reliable indicator of the underlying pathology. That is more and more obvious. So the sort of biomarkers which we have available today are really helpful in this regard.
Right. And yes, because a lot of the studies previously would use symptomatics, and they really, really aren't useful. And symptomatics are not cheap.
Yeah.
I mean, we talk about the expensive PET scans, but if you're spending a day or several days or lots of days doing psychological tests with the expensive stuff, that's not cheap either.
Absolutely. And there have been some studies that also try to put the finger on cost efficiency if the diagnosis is not made for a long time or a wrong diagnosis is followed for a long time. But this is, of course, still also a matter of debate, as these tests are sort of expensive.
Right.
On the other hand, if we compare this to costs we have in other parts of the health systems with regard to treatment, it's in proportion not as extremely expensive that I would say it's impossible to use these tests in clinical routine also.
Right. Well, thank you very much for you and congratulations. You've got the Image of the Year, the Society of Nuclear Medicine Image of the Year, which is a very prestigious award, and congratulations on that. Tell us about that image. Tell us about what that image showed us.
Well, first I have to pass on the congratulations to our team, which is Dr. Bischoff, who did the main work and presented it here, and also Thilo von Eimeren, who is running our multimodal imaging group, and also to the involved collaboration partners, as I mentioned before. So this was really a collaborative effort. The image itself basically summarizes quite illustratively the patterns on a cortical surface of the amyloid deposition in a group-based analysis compared to controls of the tau deposition and of the neural dysfunction, and even if looked at it in a non-expert way, you easily can depict that the patterns of the tau abnormalities and the neural dysfunction are extremely similar. So this is quite strikingly indicating that there must be some relation between this molecular pathology and the neuronal dysfunction, which is apparently not the case for the amyloid distribution across the entire brain and neuronal dysfunction.
Yeah. But you also did show there was some relationship in terms of amyloid, in terms of increasing its effect on tau to FTG changes.
So amyloid pathology seems to be required. This is still what we believe in, but it is obviously not as directly involved in the neuronal dysfunction, which is in a way also plausible, as it is extraneurally located and the tau pathology is inside the neuron. So from that aspect, you would believe that tau pathology might exert a more direct effect on neuronal dysfunction, and the amyloid pathology maybe forms the precondition for this sort of cascade. Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your interest.
Giving your time.
Thank you.
Much appreciated.
Excellent. So.